Well, I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News Tom Mueller, Artistic Director of the Fremantle Biennale, and Catherine Wilkinson, Program Director of the same. Congratulations, you guys, on a fantastic third Fremantle Biennale. Tom, did it meet expectations?
Oh, look, absolutely, Michael. I mean, it's been a big project in the making, 2 years, in reimagining what this new edition would feel and be like. And we were very pleased with the audience feedback and just generally the buy-in that people have in having a better sense of place and what it's like to collectively have a sense of ownership around place and understanding, you know, our location and so on. So yeah, very pleased, very pleased.
Well, this year, one of the sensations that the Biennale opened with was Mumbakai. Mm. Lasers all happening in the air. It was done in Fremantle on the Derbal Yarragon between the bridges. It was done in Atterdale on the foreshore. It was done in Coogee on the waterfront. And there were thousands at some of these. What was the biggest turnout?
The biggest turnout was Coogee Beach, our last edition. We had about 20,000 people on the beach.
20,000?
Quite an extraordinary number. I think, you know, by the time people heard about it, it takes a while sometimes. I think word of mouth is the best way of spreading news. And I think that having also had a location like the beach, which is such a public location, and people felt more comfortable perhaps at the beach. Atterdale was down at the river. It was a much bigger open ground, and Fremantle had other complexities, obviously taking off from bridges and having more of a kind of an urban environment. So I think numbers grew steadily over the duration of the 3 weeks. And again, it's important to remember that each location had a very different story speaking back to the actual place it was found in.
Now, we'll come back to the fact that there are a number of local governments apart from Fremantle this time. But Catherine, as program director, I think you have prior experience in this site responsive art project work, don't you?
Yeah, so I mean, our conversation before, you sort of reminded me a little bit, and I was just thinking about this idea of we're very much a festival that programs thinking about place and communities within those places. And I think, you know, so much of our programming happening around particularly water bodies and the river and the ocean was completely on purpose, and just thinking about ways that we can interact and bring people into art experiences by coming to the places that they already spend time in, that they already spend time with their families, and they already gather there and they already tell stories there. And really so much of our festival is really kind of, I guess, tapping into that and expanding on that.
The thing that strikes me about each of the three biennales, and I've enjoyed each, is that there's something old-fashioned and spectacular about them, Tom. Previously, you've had some what we might call imported acts. They were local because they were here. Mm. But you've been, in a sense, during COVID, forced into programming something that's much more local. It's state or Australia-based. And things that have been created for Fremantle and the environs. Tell me a little bit about a couple of years ago when you started to imagine what we've just experienced, how you went about thinking about how this was going to happen, what you were going to present, what your objectives and your aims were.
We always traditionally have one or two major works, like a flagship work that speaks back to the theme. So Crossing was the theme we had for this year. And initially we had identified another international leading artist that kind of had a work that spoke to that, but obviously that didn't happen for obvious reasons. And it was a great way for us to re-examine what our position is and how we can celebrate our local heroes and help them scale up and become more ambitious in that respect. So I think it was actually really great to be able to invest in local practice. And someone like Ilona, for instance, was an emerging artist, had very little experience, and to help her and I guess the whole support network around to build a work that could potentially have an afterlife outside Western Australia and beyond is also a great model. So rather than importing, we're creating this amazing capacity locally and create opportunities and potential for that work to exist somewhere else. So it's kind of reversing that whole model. But also, Michael, because of the actual theme this year, the theme very much spoke to are altered histories and the kind of seminal event that happened down at the ports, the blasting away of that sandbar. I mean, that had to be really told by people from here in the most truthful sense. So I think that also kind of made us refocus our attention on local practitioners.
Catherine, can I just come back to you about this site-responsive art and the comments that you each made about people who perhaps don't normally attend artistic performances, maybe they see them as too highbrow or they're too busy doing other things, but to go to Coogee Beach, be one of 20,000 people and watch what goes into the sky. And you've got a background in site-responsive work. What is site-responsive art trying to do? It's what Tom just said, I suppose, but is it more? Are you trying to make people feel good about themselves? Are you just trying to create harmony in the community? Are you conveying very particular stories?
I mean, yeah, that's a very big question.
It is a big question.
And I think every you know, producer and artist working in a kind of site-responsive way would answer that differently. I mean, my opinion on that is that we're not necessarily trying to create spaces just for agreement and a niceness. I think in a way is what we're trying to do is really to truthfully talk to experience, you know, stories of place. And then, you know, within a democratic community, and trying to get as many people as we can to these events, there is absolutely space for people to bring their own kind of, you know, opinions and experiences to interact with that telling of story. And that for me is really what we're trying to do. And so, you know, we've been laughing this entire festival. If we didn't have the occasional kind of, you know, annoyed punter or someone who didn't like a work, then we'd kind of be doing something wrong. This idea of kind of consensus in community is just, for me, not particularly accurate or interesting. Like, we want to sort of start conversation in what we're doing.
That's... We want a little bit of controversy.
Well, absolutely.
I can tell you, and you'll be aware that one of the first things that happened that people caused people to realise that the Biennale was about to start was that the pavement between the two bridges was painted. Fremantle Shipping News put up a lovely selection of photographs, and I must say I love it. I'm now disclosing my position, which I haven't done before. I loved it, but there was a range of people who were outraged for a variety of reasons. Tom, what was all that about? And did you see some of the comment?
I did, Michael. I think it was great. Just to come back to the earlier comment that I think art should provoke and stimulate conversations and should provoke, you know, a sense of opinion. So, but to come back to this particular question, Michael, some people living nearby the waterfront felt maybe a little entitled that their front yard, which happens to be a public space, was being altered and maybe not to their expectations. So there was a sense of entitlement that we had to work through with a small group of these residents. And I guess the big beef, Marco, was that, you know, they felt that their local council, in this case East Fremantle, hadn't consulted with them. And I think once you start consulting with all your ratepayers and all your residents, you will probably never pull off any major public work of art. So I think now that the past has been in existence, it's been walked upon, it's become a bit more embedded into the sort of landscape, I think those people might feel different about it. I've had a few other echoes, but it was quite challenging to begin, you know, 2 weeks out to have this very confrontational conversation around what should or what shouldn't be art in this instance.
So it's probably easy to have someone called the Elector of Bavaria or something choosing who's going to do art rather than the town of East Fremantle.
Indeed.
So what are the challenges for the two of you in producing this? What were the biggest challenges this year? And that might have been starting out 2 years ago, Tom. It might have been in the last 10 minutes, making sure the electricity was plugged in so the lasers could take off for Moombakai. What are your recollections?
Yeah, well, we can both answer this in some ways. I think the big major challenges have really been around permissions and approvals and making sure that the myriad of partners we've been working with, from different government agencies to private individuals to other partners, making sure they understand the complexity of the work and also inspiring them, empowering them about the merits and the kind of impact some of these works can have. So I think all that behind the scenes work has been very challenging for us. We're a very lean and agile team, and had to kind of resource to
probably leaner and more agile than you were a couple of years ago.
Probably. I think this is a big challenge. And also the other interesting adventure we've had is how we embed more of a cross-cultural space and collaborative approach to all the works, and making sure this was done in the most truthful and appropriate manner. We've learned a lot in making sure that this happened at board level, staff level, and with our artists. So we started this whole journey over a year ago and started as an entire organization to work on these creative conciliation sessions together. I think that's been, for me anyway, like a very interesting part in how we can learn and maybe unlearn things first and foremost.
That's a very interesting, both sort of cultural, intellectual, social level of thinking, which sort of everything in society is really built on. But you have to sit down and check where you stand on your various privileges these days, don't you? Catherine, for you, what were the interesting challenges of any sort?
Yeah, I mean, I think just picking up on that point, you know, the past year we've also done some reframing, thinking about, you know, what a festival is, and it's not just the outcomes that we deliver once every 2 years, but the sort of relationships that we build within community in between and during those times. So I think that's been a big bit of work for both of us, really, and something we'll continue to do. And you know, I think what you see is only probably a very small part of what's happening. But yeah, I do echo the producer life is 70% paperwork, you know, small portion creative. But I think there's something creatively challenging in, you know, particularly, for instance, in Wumbakai, having main roads and local government and CASA, the sky and, the people who sort of look after the river all speaking to each other to make a work that's never happened happen. And there's a lot of trust building and paperwork in that. So,
well, so welcome to government in a sense, I
absolutely
suppose.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Writing how it works.
But, you know, navigating those permissions is a part of the process and, you know, making the work as well. And I think when you see it like that, rather than a sort of tension between the creative and the paperwork, it sort of makes it more possible.
Looking at the top of the iceberg, the tip that everyone was familiar with, Catherine, what were sort of, in terms of crowd turn up, the most popular, what seemed to really capture the public imagination?
I mean, I think we've spoken a lot about Mumbakai. Obviously, yes. That was, you know, the numbers were huge and, you know, quadrupled really our expectations. I think one of the other, I guess I'm going to say most visited rather than most popular, was Bruno Booth's work, Tightness Times Toughness. And, you know, I think at most of the times during the festival, there was a queue to navigate the two corridors which existed at Enworld Park. And just, I think that one sort of leaned into that popularity simply for the range of responses to people navigating a work which talked about accessibility to public space. And I think after all our questions around how strongly people feel about their public spaces, this was quite, I guess, just invited people to take a moment of pause and to think about their own privilege for moving through public space.
Yeah. And Tom, did you have any personal favourites as it went along?
Yeah, I mean, you know, on a personal note, I really enjoyed Vespers, like I believe you did as well. There was something quite beautiful.
It was one of the most calming experiences, I think.
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, the process behind Vespers was interesting, working with the community of Kudaboat owners. That started quite a while ago, making sure that they understood what the intent was. Initially, they were very enthusiastic, kind of thinking about putting lights on boat and smoke coming out of it. But we really wanted to celebrate the sheer simplicity and beautiful craftsmanship of these boats and the history of these boats. And having, you know, composer Rachel Lees work uniquely with sound and the choreographed kind of movement on the water, and just that sheer simplicity and that calmness, and that kind of relationship between wind and water and the human intervention in between was quite beautiful. And I think I spoke about this before, but the kind of lack of trickery, that there's no tricks, like it's a very simple and a work you can unpack in your mind's eye, but sitting with it. And I think having Vespers took place over 3 days and having that audience build and simply just being, existing on that small beach at John Tonkin Park was quite delightful, really.
You could have heard a pin drop.
Yeah.
it was amazing.
Absolutely.
And probably a shout out to the sound people with all of this, because we sit there and take it all in, but the work that must go into to getting the sound and getting the sound right, incredible.
Absolutely. Another interesting one, Marco, was having, you know, Jesse Lee Johns back, and I know you've covered Jesse Lee Johns' work in the past.
I'm so pleased to see Jesse Lee's back, because I remember when I interviewed him 2 years ago, I thought, what's going to happen to this? It's not going to get taken down the tip or put on the funeral pyre or something. And to see the Republic, was it?
The Commonwealth of New Bayswater.
The Commonwealth of New Bayswater back. That was something else.
Reimagined, the same materials, some have made it way back from 2019, reimagined, repurposed. And again, we kind of expanded on the conversation. I think the museum site near Blackwall Reach had a very different focus around it. So artist Rowan Kickett participated. And I think the greater work started asking questions around, like, what's it like to recolonize an existing colony? And sort of asking these questions on the macrocosmic level, we hope allowed our audiences to kind of question our existence here at times.
And there's something else about it that always struck me with Jesse Lee's imagination, and that is people, in a sense, can almost live anywhere. They were nearly camping, and people turn up and they relate to each other differently, I think, when you get them out of their bricks and mortar. But now tell me this, Catherine. You have to start work again and start thinking about what's going to happen in 2 years' time, because this will all be happening again. Have you got some ideas that you've started to think about?
I think there's very gentle ideas there, but you know, I also think it's very important to have space at this point.
Yes.
Just to, you know, spend a little time reflecting on, you know, we're talking now about what worked, but I think so much more comes up in a few months when you've had a little bit of space to think about it. But yeah, I think there's definitely, I don't know, commenting on Jesse's as well, there's something about the playfulness in that work.
Totally playful.
And like creating a space for to therefore raise quite, you know, big issues thinking about recolonization. So I've been thinking about that a lot as well. And yeah, thinking a lot about sound in space and you know, a festival that moves but still continues to sort of sit by the water.
Do you think, Catherine, that people in Fremantle like to think there in this category, that Fremantle people are a bit more receptive to new ideas that are thrown out? Things from left field, concept of recolonisation, or can you do this anywhere?
I think there's capacity to do it a bit anywhere, personally. But I think you have to first identify who your community is and be very honest about who that is. Yeah, I think in that question there's this idea that we could go in and do it anywhere, but we're Fremantle locals, so we sort of feel like there's like we have a connection to this place, so therefore we can come in and engage with these communities. And we're very aware that play, you know, for instance, the Biennale, Fremantle Biennale going elsewhere is a whole different process.
Well, there is a touch of sort of self-congratulation in the question, isn't there? But just segueing from that, Tom, to the question or the point I raised earlier about the involvement of other local governments in the broader Fremantle area, which was great to see. Was that difficult to achieve? Is there room to expand the Biennale insights right around those municipalities and perhaps others?
Look, perhaps. I think.
You mightn't want to.
Sure. For example, the way we made sense of that, Michael, was really just around the waterway, kind of connecting these various locations. And I think that, for us, from a conceptual point of view, actually made it much easier to tie in other locations beyond Fremantle. But if you look at the greater Fremantle region, it does incorporate many other LJAs. And I think maybe Coburn's a little different, but I guess that coastal component also feeds in quite beautifully. And to come back to your earlier question that Catherine responded, I think that, you know, we have a community that's very, very learned here, and I think we are talking to a very select audience. And I think our big challenge going forward is to reach broader audiences and to bring them into this conversation. So I think that's a challenge for us. And maybe, you know, the Fremantle Biennale will maybe exist beyond its immediate surrounds. But I think the spiritual and cultural heart will always be here in Wallyalup in Fremantle for a whole range of reasons. But that doesn't mean, like we've seen with Mumbuka, it can expand and extend beyond other places. And the challenge for us will be how to bring some of these conversations back into this very nexus here at Fremantle, because a lot of our histories have happened right here for this, for our histories anyway. I think there's a big conversation around that.
Totally. And I think it's an interesting question for us to moving forward to thinking about, you know, growing audiences, like who is not in Fremantle, who does not come to this place, and sort of asking why and thinking about how we can reach out to those audiences and communities.
At sort of project level, at the artistic director, program director levels, how do you seek to answer that question? Do you take the proverbial survey out and find out from people what they thought? Do you, presumably you consult with a range of people who were there, and you do, but you still have to have the confidence of your own vision, don't you, with all of this?
Absolutely. I think it's what you mentioned is all correct. Like it's surveys, it's talking to audience members from outside Fremantle and, you know, like how they feel their experiences might have been reimagined or retransformed through this experience here. But it's a work in progress, Michael. Interestingly enough, the drone light show, which is also known as First Lights, will have an afterlife over the next 2 years in the regions. We received some substantial federal funding to deploy this capacity in remote communities across our state and beyond. So I think this is a great opportunity for us to kind of grow the bigger messaging behind what the Fremantle Biennale is trying to achieve in its sort of intent.
That has the capacity, I would have thought, not only for a national but an international audience, from what I've seen. Mm. Thinking about some remote parts of Western Australia, Jindawarana, I think it is the Yindjibarndi name for Millstream. Beautiful, spiritual part of the world. And I can imagine the Yindjibarndi, can't speak for them, thinking this would be a great idea. And what a setting, and what dreaming stories to go with a performance like this. Oh, getting a little bit misty-eyed here.
Absolutely.
What is, after you've debriefed and you've had a nice Christmas and popped a few bottles of champagne, what is the more technical side of the work that you do after that? You have to start imagining what 2 years is going to happen very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I think, honestly, it'll probably be a lot of grant writing. And I think actually we're thinking about, bringing in who are the sort of, really thinking to who are the young leaders in the community, in the artists we've worked in, who we want to work with moving forward. That's a big question for us. Mm.
And, you know, from a cultural narration point of view, as you know, we've moved from location to location, so we're not going to be in the same place again. And what would make sense for us to explore next? And I think what, you know, all these sort of new parties that are kind of playing into this whole conversation. And really the first thing for us next year will be about writing or starting to imagine what a new artistic brief will look like. That's always how we start, kind of, you know, hatch a document that speaks to that. And over time and over conversation, it starts becoming more fleshed out and more kind of substantial. And then grant writing and then further relationship buildings. But I think it's important for us to capture what this next imagination will be about. And that will come through this whole process of debriefing and reevaluating and speaking to audience members and participating artists in many ways.
We can all forget about the money, in a sense, I'm not suggesting we should, but those of us who go along and just enjoy the performances forget there's all the planning, there's all of the technical side of it, and it all requires money to make it work. And one can run down the list of major partners and sponsors and contributors and people who provided the free wine and everything else. At the governmental levels, do you get federal government as well as state and local?
We do, yeah. We've been very fortunate this year to attract both state and federal level funding, especially around that drone light show concept. But also, you know, like local sort of growing up a benefactor circle and actually getting individuals that believe in the greater messaging. That was a very strong component this year, and having some heavy hitters come on board and seeing the potential for the Fremantle Biennale in the future and to talk about identity of place. Yes. And I think that's been a key component. It's not just about getting these invisible funding pools, but about having peoples like yourselves and others who actually become real advocates to make this our Biennale and about our place. And I think that's really key going forward.
Well, I have the sense that that really is happening, Tom. People, I think, ought to and will in time want to come here once they are allowed through the Strait borders, but to come to the Fremantle Biennale. What a great place to be. The weather is usually perfect. You can stay in while you're up Fremantle. You can wander around. You can probably, by foot or public transport, get to most things that are happening. It ought to be a continuing large, large enterprise.
Well, maybe we're biased as Fremantle people. I don't know.
Well, I think we probably are, but we are also familiar with what we've seen in other places, and we have a sense of what works here.
Ah, absolutely. This place is a pool for people, I think.
Well, look, I think we'll bring it to an end because it's you guys have to get back to work. But congratulations on what I think was a highly successful third Fremantle Biennale, and more power to you both, and look forward to 2 years. It'll fly by. Yeah.
Thank you, Michael. Cheers.